Well, my guest today, nutritional therapist Elise Resch, is not only going to tell you that diets don't work, she's going to tell you why. But take heart, because she's also going to explain the principles of intuitive eating, which is also the name of the book she co-authored with Evelyn Triboli. And I promise you, the principles of intuitive eating do not mention carrot sticks or points or exchanges or any other jargon you're used to hearing. Welcome, Elise. We want to hear from you. All right, so what is an intuitive eater?
I believe that each of us is born with all the wisdom that she needs to have or he needs to have to know how to eat. Babies tell you loud and clear when they're hungry. And if you try to push more milk into a baby, especially if you're breastfeeding, that baby's going to nod his head and push away and not want to eat anymore. We're all born with the wisdom to know when we're hungry, when we're full. If we're given a wide variety of foods in those early ages, stages of life, we tend to know what tastes good to us. We tend to know what feels good, how our bodies work best with food. So intuitive eaters do this naturally. They've never been distracted from those signals from the time that they were babies. Unfortunately, as you have said, Fran, so many people have been on diets that we get distracted from those intuitive signals. And we can learn to rediscover them.
Well, is it something that we lose? So, I mean, they talk about kids, you know, being able to learn a language when they're young, but then later on, it's just much more difficult. Do we lose it, or it's still there and we just have it covered up?
No, I think it's there. I think it's covered with layers and layers of debris, things that you read in magazines and watching on television and hearing from even waiters in a restaurant. Someone just told me that she went to a restaurant and asked for a bread basket, and the waiter said, "Really? Most girls don't want bread baskets at the table."
Now you're being judged by the waiters, too.
Right. And she has no problems with eating, but she said to me, I had to stop for a moment and think, oh, am I doing something wrong by asking for bread? So there's so many messages out there that create this debris, and we just have to peel back all of those layers, and we'll get back to that intuitive eater.
Knowing that you're a nutritionist, mm-hmm. and also since I've spoken to you before, I know at the beginning of your career, you used to give people a more structured diet. So what brought you to this approach?
Well, it's interesting. You said something before about people would say they weren't diets. I really didn't believe I was giving people diets. I was taught in graduate school to give an exchange system, teach someone to have a certain amount of servings of carbohydrates and proteins and fats, and I would say these are the amount of exchanges you need for the day, and yes, you can trade off, you can have that cookie instead of the bread. I didn't realize that that was a diet, because I thought that it was about giving people freedom, but the truth was I was telling them how much to eat, what ratio of foods to eat, and it was taking away their own personal freedom. So let me back up a little. I actually didn't want to deal with weight control when I started my practice. I was trained working with developmentally disabled kids, and I thought, that's the work I'm going to do. But, of course, I kept getting referrals from doctors, from other people for people who needed to lose weight for medical reasons or other reasons. And I couldn't avoid it. So I did what I was taught in graduate school, but I had this very icky feeling in my stomach while I was doing it. I knew there was something wrong. I couldn't place it, though, because I didn't understand what was wrong. And after a few years, when I saw people losing weight quite well, I would weigh them every week because that's what I was taught to do, and they would lose the weight, and then I wouldn't hear from them for a couple of years, and I started getting phone calls, people feeling so much shame, feeling so terrible, never blaming me. They thought I was great. They were blaming themselves. They thought there was something wrong with them because they gained all the weight back. And that just confirmed that icky feeling in my stomach. So at that point, I said, I've got to go deeper into this. And I really started researching more and more about psychology and the psychology of eating and listening to the new talk about non-diet approach, which was around coming out in those days. And first I said, well, how can I do this? How can I tell people not to, worry about what they eat? I'm a nutritionist, after all. I really care about nutrition. But I had to get more deeply into the psychology of it to really understand that any time someone is told what to do, that person is naturally going to rebel if she has a healthy ego. And any time someone is deprived of anything, she wants more of it. If I had a child in this room right now and I put say, 37 toys down on the floor. And I said to that child, you can play with any one of those toys except that one over there in the corner. I actually have a rock in my office. It says intuition on it. And if I said, you can play with anything but the rock, where would that child gravitate?
Absolutely go to the rock. That's right.
So I plunged in, and I've never been so happy. I mean, I've been doing this work now. I've been in private practice 27 years, and for well over 20 years of it, I've been helping people let go of some of that old thing.
Well, you don't just say that diets don't work. You say that diets are evil.
Oh, yeah. Diets are evil.
Now, that's really a heavily loaded word. Now, why?
Well, many reasons. A big part of my work is helping people heal from eating disorders and also helping people, you know, preventing an eating disorder in someone, especially adolescents. Anyone with an eating disorder, and I would say this almost universally, has many, many thoughts that are diet-oriented thoughts, or certainly for most people, they've been on diets. So number one, diets unquestionably lead to eating disorders, and eating disorders are killers, both physically and also emotionally. People feel terrible about themselves.
Well, you know what? That was confirmed here. I talked to Leslie Lipton, who talked about adolescents with eating disorders in her book, Unwell. Diets are what led to the disordered thinking and eating.
You know, in fact, there's been studies of children, one in particular I can think of, where they would take five-year-old girls who were at risk for overweight, and they looked at them over a four-year period, and the ones that were put on restricted plans at 5 years old were heavier, had more compulsive behavior around their eating, more obsessive thoughts, more negative body image than the little girls who were left alone, who ended up being much healthier at 9 years old. So it's very dangerous. The other piece of it is, if even if someone doesn't end up with a serious eating disorder, just with disordered eating, the feelings that people carry around, the feelings of low self-esteem and of shame, are so sad. I work with the most wonderful people, brilliant, successful people in so many ways in their lives, and yet their self-esteem is low because they can't seem to make the diet work. So I think it's evil to have a system that promotes this sort of low self-esteem, and that also is so seductive. I mean, everywhere you turn, the newest diet is coming out, and it offers people this incredible hope, I'm going to be able to change everything. And of course, people attach every aspect of their lives to their weight. So it's not just I'm going to lose the weight, but if I lose the weight, I'm going to find the perfect partner,
and
I'm going to get the best job.
Right. There's so much that they put on them. And what percentage of people gain back the weight they lose?
Well, it's really interesting. There's a researcher at UCLA named Tracy Mann who decided to take a look at what has happened with people who diet. And she looked at 31 long-term studies of diets. And she found that even though people often would lose 5 to 10% of their starting weight in the first 6 months, at least one-third to two-thirds of people on diets regain more weight than they lost within 4 or 5 years. And she thinks that that number is actually low because people don't report honestly. They're embarrassed to come to follow-ups. They're embarrassed to say how much weight they've gained. So we're looking at 95% is the current amount of recidivism, people who gain their weight back. So we're looking at 95%, and I've seen some studies that say 97% of people who go on diets gain their weight back. And then one-third to two-thirds of those gain even more weight, so they end up worse off than when they began.
You know, if I think over the years, myself and friends of mine and family and people I've known in passing, people who have dieted, it looks to me as if everybody loses some weight, some more than others. But I picture it almost like a boomerang, like the weight goes out into the universe, and it takes about 2 years, and then it starts to come back, first slowly and then more rapidly. And I would say in my entire life, how many hundreds of people, I can think of two who actually kept the weight off.
There's my 98%.
That's where it goes. And it amazes me, you know, if you invested in something and you gained some money, and then after 2 years, you not only lost the money you gained, but you lost more, you would get rid of the person who told you to invest in that, you know.
I mean, dieting is a $3 to $5 billion a year business with this 95 to 98% recidivism rate. Isn't that sad, the power of it to pull people in?
Yeah, well, it's almost like people are hoping you fail. Therefore, they get your money again and again and again. You're going to keep joining these organizations.
And that is true. They're set up to fail, especially some of these businesses. I think some of the hospital programs think they're really going to keep the weight off, but I know that they don't either. It's very sad.
All right, so leptin and ghrelin. We've heard about these two things over the last couple of years, and I always get confused which is which and what role do they play in weight control.
Okay, well, ghrelin, the way you can remember it is ghrelin is your stomach growling for food.
Okay.
Okay. So ghrelin is produced in the stomach, and it causes hunger. And leptin is produced in your fat cells mainly, and it reduces hunger. Now, the problem is, let me give you a word that I love. I love the word homeobalance. Not homeostasis, but homeobalance. I really believe that the body is geared to maintain balance. And so when something goes up, something else goes down. I'll give you an outside example. If you take a lot of calcium and you don't need so much calcium, there's a feedback mechanism. You don't absorb as much calcium. If you're very low in calcium, you'll absorb more calcium. Everything to keep balance in the body. So if you lose weight, especially rapidly on a diet, your leptin levels go down, but then your ghrelin levels come up, make you hungrier. You see, ghrelin increases before meals and decreases after meals.
Mm-hmm.
Your ghrelin levels are increased when your leptin levels go down. So you lose the body fat, so you lose leptin, but the brain gets the message to increase the hunger and to slow the metabolism to get you right back to where you were before. In fact, also, by the way, this is just a side piece, with a lack of sleep, we're always talking about how much we need sleep, we have increased ghrelin levels if we have less sleep, and that presses our leptin.
If I'm learning to eat intuitively, mm-hmm. I'm going to be able to keep those two hormones in balance?
Yes, absolutely. You're not doing anything drastic to the body. With intuitive eating, and I want to make this very clear.
And you probably should also just say quickly what the principles of it are.
I will. Intuitive eating is not a process with the first concept being weight loss. It's not a plan to lose weight. However, I will say that if one's eating has been not been in touch with hunger and fullness, you've been eating emotionally, you haven't taken care of yourself, and you put those concepts into emotion, many, many people have lost weight. But I want to be very clear that the weight loss has to be on the back burner. It's something that evolves organically through the process if your body is meant to lose weight. I have had calls from people, from models who are, 5'10" and weigh 115 pounds and want to lose weight and want to know if intuitive eating will do it. No, it won't do that. But for most of the people who come to me, they've clearly been unconscious, out of touch. So you ask, what are the principles? I won't give them to you in order because I don't even think of them in order. I think that they're all synergistic. And for me, and this is not necessarily what other people might think, but the driving force of this is satisfaction. One of the principles is find satisfaction in your eating. And when you're looking for satisfaction, you're going to want to eat when you're hungry. So one of the principles is honor your hunger. If you start eating when you're not hungry, food's not going to be very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
If you're full and you continue eating, food is not going to be very satisfying. So you want to look for fullness, you want to look for hunger. Honor your hunger and find your fullness. Those are two of the principles. Satisfaction, based on finding the food that's really, truly going to satisfy you. And that requires making peace with food, with no more rules, no more judgment, no more morality, negative thoughts about food. All foods are equal. And you might say, well, how can you say that, Elise? You're a nutritionist. Of course, certain foods have more nutritional value, but the truth is, from an emotional standpoint, from a moral standpoint, all foods have to be equal. And after a while, when you're seeking foods that are satisfying, you tend to find over time that balance comes into your life. Again, going back to the balance, I really believe that we are geared toward balance in our lives. So hunger, fullness, pleasure and satisfaction in food, giving yourself permission to eat what you want to eat, looking at the emotions that drive you to eat, and learning how to cope with emotions without using food. And that's, of course, one of the biggest problems that people have is going to food as a way to deal with life. The other principles are looking at movement, taking away exercise from weight loss, but just finding ways to move the body, because baseline, everybody needs to move. And looking at thoughts, getting rid of the food police, the kinds of thoughts that are in your head that judge you. So there are 10 principles. I don't know if I mentioned them all.
But you give us an overview. You're listening to A League of Our Own, Smart Talk for Women. I'm Fran Spencer, and my guest today is nutrition therapist Elise Resch, author of the book Intuitive Eating. All right, so let's talk about success stories, because I know somebody's listening, and they're saying, okay, well, if that model couldn't lose another few pounds, but, you know, I'm like 30 pounds overweight, is my body just going to say this is where I want to be? I mean, usually if you don't feel comfortable in the body you're in, it means there's some weight that can be shed, correct? So can you tell me some success stories?
As long as people will put the weight loss on the back burner, and what I mean by that is, I'll give you one wonderful story. I have a client who had been heavy all of her life as a child. She was the only member of her family that was heavy. She had been on every diet in the world. Her mother had been very concerned about her weight and put her on diets, and she came to see me, and for 3 years she fought with me.
Oh,
she spent 3 years wanting to do more diets and diet thinking, and yet she kept coming because she liked to be here. And she finally let go of that, started really embracing the principles, and you wouldn't believe this, but she lost close to 100 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, one might say, oh, it took her 3 years to even begin losing weight. Well, everybody's in a different place. Some people are very willing to let go of dieting and saying, it's not an option. I can never diet again, and their process is different. But there are other people who are really at a perfectly normal weight, set point weight. They look at magazines and would like to be two sizes smaller, but their weight is normal and healthy, and they might not lose weight, but they might get what to me is the most important thing, peace of mind. They spend their lives feeling bad about their eating, not enjoying food, and they're so happy that, you know, food is a joyful experience at that point. So, again, I don't want to say that this is another weight loss plan. Yes, weight loss happens. It will absolutely happen for people who are above their set point weight. Set point being your genetically determined weight based on normal intuitive eating and normal movement, which is baseline. Another story I have, a young man whom I worked with when he was 8 for a while, he wasn't interested. He went away. He said, this isn't for me. And he came back to me when he was 15. And it took him about, oh, I would say less than a year to really come to terms with his emotional eating. He didn't really think he was an emotional eater because he didn't go to food when he was upset, but he was eating large volumes of food when he ate his meals. And he was finally able to say, oh, I see, I get it. If I'm not hungry anymore, my body doesn't need food. So something emotionally must be going on for me if I'm continuing to eat these volumes of food and be so stuffed afterwards.
And that's hard with a young person to come to that recognition.
Ah, he was, I think, 16 by that point. And so he did, and he went on to lose probably 80 pounds, changed his whole life. He, having been heavy his entire life and teased as a child, like my other client had been, he went back into his junior year of high school, and everything turned around for him. And he's now in his finishing his first year of college and doing great, hasn't gained back any of the weight.
You know, it's funny, you're talking about young people also, and I can't believe sometimes the very young ones, certainly there's always been a range of weights, but I don't remember when I was a kid. I mean, I didn't have a weight problem then. I don't remember any of my friends having them. You know, Americans now, both young and old, we are fat. I've been to Europe, and you would think in Italy with all the pasta, but I don't see as many heavy people as here. Or you would think in France because of the chocolate. I mean, they love their chocolate. There's a chocolate shop on every block, and their wine. And yeah, there are some heavy people, but not as many as here. And you made a very interesting comparison in your book about the U.S. and France with regards to low-calorie food, low-fat foods, and dieting. You want to tell us about that?
Well, sure. You see, there's so many elements to this. But in Europe, there's a much more positive attitude about eating. Eating is set up to be this wonderful experience. I think they close down their stores in many countries to have the two-hour lunch period. And what they're doing is they're embracing satisfaction. They're eating exactly what they want. They're not cutting out the fat. They're not cutting out the flavor. By the way, the fat molecule is what carries flavor in food.
So I believe that.
You take away the fat and the food is not satisfying, and keep eating more and more of it. And they have smaller portions. They have just that beginning is the best taste of the food, just a tiny bit of it, and then they go on to something else. And they enjoy themselves, and they walk away completely satisfied. And by the way, they walk away. There's lots of movement in Europe, natural movement. You know, we'll park our cars at the closest place. We'll go around 3 times so that we don't have to walk a block.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a piece of it also in Europe. But it's much more about the sense of food. There's no morality about food. Tell an Italian the pasta is bad, they'll laugh at you right in your face. I mean, pasta is the mainstay, the wonderful bread in these countries, the olive oils, the creams, everything. It makes the food delicious, but they don't need to eat too much of it.
So, therefore, do they not do emotional eating? I mean, I can see where they might have a society that gives them less guilt about the eating they do, but when it comes to emotional issues, they don't turn to food?
Well, I have this very strong belief that if we believe we shouldn't be eating certain foods, and then we have some emotion that's difficult to handle, we give ourselves the license to eat what we are regularly not allowing ourselves to eat. And so we're much more apt to go to emotional eating when we've had forbidden foods in our lives. But if food is there all the time, you can have it any time. There's no morality attached to it. When you're upset, you don't say, oh, good, now I get to eat my chocolate. As you said, in France, they eat their chocolates every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I can't say to you that there aren't eating disorders in Europe. Of course there are. They're all over the world. But there isn't that same tendency to go to emotional eating because the food has been forbidden. So it's just less.
The deprivation is what leads you to seek that as the emotional comfort instead of maybe something else. Although I will say there's a lot more cigarette smoking in Europe.
But that's decreasing now. Yes, there is more, but it is decreasing. They're getting laws there, too. But I think there's more. I think more than the cigarettes, it's the movement. People, they walk 3 blocks to go to the subway, or they walk. Have you ever been to Venice, Italy? That's all you do is walk.
That's right. So immediately that would be a stress reliever right there. Something I read in your book, though, that actually made me laugh, but it was a very good thing. I mean, many diets, they tell you, if you're hungry, because to me, when I'm dieting, I'm hungry. If you're hungry, get that popcorn going with a little salt, of course, no butter, or the rice cakes, which to me is like eating cardboard. And they say, that'll fill you up and hold you to the mealtime. And I'm like, not really. That fills me up for about 20 minutes. And you say, beware of those foods.
Yeah, very much so. First of all, it promotes compulsive eating. It promotes stuffing feelings. I hate that whole concept of free food, to have as much of this as you want, because it basically says, if you're upset, eat. And, of course, later on, when you disinhibit and you go from the air rice cakes to a box of candy, you've got that behavior in motion. So, but let me back up a moment, Fran. I don't think people should be hungry. That's the problem. You see, diets give you less calories than you need, and the brain reacts. When you're talking about ghrelin and leptin, there's also another very important neuropeptide called neuropeptide Y, and there are others being discovered all the time, which is released when you're too hungry, and the neuropeptide Y drives you to binge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are hungry, that means you're eating too little, and you're slowing your metabolism. You're triggering neuropeptide Y, and it's not going to lead to any kind of permanent weight loss if your body is, needing to lose weight. So I don't believe in that. I think we need to eat more so that we can take care of ourselves so that we're not hungry more. We can get hungry every 2 to 3 hours, but if you're hungry every 5 minutes, it means you're not eating enough.
Well, if nothing else, I think it empowers people to know it's not just a lack of self-control or a lack of willpower, that there are really very powerful biochemical factors in play. And so therefore, we might need to say that we're not at a comfortable weight, but we need to find a way that's going to be kind to ourselves to get to it.
Well, and I do not believe in the concept of willpower. I really don't. I mean, yes, there's discipline in life to do the things that you really want to do, but willpower is key. From having something that you really want. And there are such strong psychological and, yes, you say biochemical, neurochemical forces that drive you to that food. Willpower just doesn't fit with eating in any case. And by the way, the psychological force is not only is there a deprivation, but there's something that I think is really one of the key reasons that diets don't work, and that's the concept of autonomy. Each of us has this very private place within us that holds all this information, all of these intuitive signals about hunger and fullness and what tastes good and how your body feels. And if someone or a diet, someone who's written a diet or a person, a dietitian, a doctor, or someone tells you what to do, crosses over that boundary into that very private place, what happens is we get this natural reaction to rebel.
Oh, absolutely.
So I
can attest to that.
That those two forces, the deprivation, but even more overpowering, that ultimately people say, I'm not going to do what you're going to tell me to do. And it may be coming from an unconscious level. They may not be consciously rebelling, but before they know it, they're doing what they want to do. So diets can't work.
Elise, there's so much information here. We could talk probably for another hour, but if audience members would like to contact you and find out more about your book, Intuitive Eating, A Revolutionary Program That Works, or find out more about the audio coaching CDs, which I've heard they're really quite wonderful, and they're also entitled Intuitive Eating, how would they do that?
There are two websites. There's the intuitiveeating.org, www.intuitiveeating.org, or I have my own personal website, www.elyseresch, which is elyseresch.com. Either one of the websites, if you get on there are links to the book to take a look at the audiobooks. And I'm glad you mentioned them because they go beyond the book. It's the basic principles of the book, but it's a conversation about the book, and there are some wonderful guided practices so that people can actually get it down and practice the principles.
Well, Elise, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
It's encouraging to hear that by using your method, eating intuitively, people have successfully gotten off the weight that they need to and gotten off that weight merry-go-round and have been able to attain and, more importantly, maintain a healthy weight. Thank you for joining us today on A League of Our Own. I am Fran Spencer.